Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. This is Chris on IMTN Worldwide Radio, and this is Around the ATL on Wednesday night. I almost forgot what night it is. 646-652-4479. Yes, the radio show is live as well. We are taking callers tonight on this particular show. Appreciate everybody who's going to be joining in either live now or in the future. So let's kind of get into it real quick. So a lot of stuff is happening this week, obviously, in Atlanta sports. But tonight, of course, is the NFL Draft Show 2023, talking a lot of Atlanta Falcons football. So what are we going to be talking about? We're going to talk about what are the Falcons going to do at number 8? Are they going to move up? Are they going to move down? How will they finish out the roster after a very successful free agency period? What do you think the Falcons are going to do this year after everything is said and done? So we'll talk about that. Of course, last night we saw one of the most exciting playoff games in Atlanta Hawks history. We all know the history between the Hawks and the Celtics over the decades. So last night definitely was a highlight for the Atlanta Hawks. You know, Trae Young took over in the fourth quarter. And, well, you know what? Let's actually just go ahead and do this, just get this out the way real quick. So let's see if we can cue this up.
And Hunter. And here's Young. Backtrack. 5-2. Young. Let's it go.
I could just play that clip the rest of the night if y'all want me to, but I probably won't. So that's what happened last night in Boston. So we're going to talk about that a little bit too, 646-652-4479 if you want to call in and talk about that. Now, that being said, tonight's show is going to be sponsored by Price Design Club, as you see there on the scroll at the bottom. If you need somebody to take care of you on the professional side when it comes to presenting your company, logo-wise, design-wise, things of that nature, make sure you hit up Price Design Club on Instagram and make sure that you let them know that Around the ATL sent you. All right. So that being said, and let's see if I can, by the way, just as a quick note, I have been not well lately. I'll just say that. Had a lot of doctor's appointments, things of that nature. So we're going to go through this show as best possible, but we're going to make it happen. Plus circumstances, don't have my usual co-host with me, so we got a special treat for y'all as well. So just wanted to throw that out there for everybody as we get set up. Also, don't forget, please subscribe to the IMTN Worldwide Radio YouTube page. It'll help us out so much in what we're doing this year. Did you miss Bob Rathman and Steve Holman of the Atlanta Hawks? You know, Steve is the voice of the Hawks on 92.9 The Game. Bob Rathman does the play-by-play on Bally Sports South. We had a great time with him last Thursday. So if you missed that interview, go to the IMTN Worldwide Radio YouTube page, episodes 123 and 122. Also, of course, the new website is up, imtnworldwideradio.com. Go check that out. Brand new site. I'm still working on it. Of course, you can follow on Instagram and Twitter, well, Instagram and Facebook, IMTN Worldwide Radio. And of course, you can follow us on Twitter, Intellect ATL and Jordan 23. Now, we have a pinch hitter tonight on the show. He is a longtime Atlanta Falcon fan. He is dynamic in his viewpoints. He's very knowledgeable. He loves going over game film. So he's going to be filling in for my co-host, Jordan Jackson, tonight. His name is John Harris. Let's go ahead and bring him into the show right now. John, how you doing, sir?
Pretty good, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, how are you tonight?
Doing well. Let's see.
And you introduced me as a treat. Now, you know, I advise everyone watching me right now, don't view me on a high-resolution television.
Uh-oh.
You know, regular picture tube TV will be just fine.
Uh-oh, here we go. And actually, it looks like we have our co-host who's just called in as well. So let's go ahead and bring him in. Hey, Jordan, what's going on, sir?
What's going on, sir? Mr. Harris, how are you, sir?
Man, how you be tonight?
I'm doing well, man, you know, at work, but I've been able to sneak and call for a few minutes before I got to jump back to duty, and hopefully I'll be able to join you guys for the last part of the show, at the very least, once I do have to go. But I figured I might as well come chop it up with you fellas for a little while I have a second.
We appreciate that. So,
yes,
so first things first, so let's review some of the offseason moves. We know that the Falcons for a long time have had issues at depth and just skilled talent-wise on the defensive side of the ball. So the Falcons went all out this year. They said, we have the money finally. We're going to do something about it. So that's one of the first things I want to kind of just broach briefly, and either of y'all can kind of chime in. Let me see if I can pull it up real quick. Give me a second. That's a depth chart. That's a draft. Yeah, just fine. So I'm going to just name some of these people, and anybody can kind of throw out there what they think of any of these players. Some of them are current players, but like I said, this is free agent and also free agent moves outside of who we already have. So I'm going to just name names real quick. Caleb McGarry, obviously, offensive tackle. Taylor Heinicke, quarterback. He's a backup. Jesse Bates, safety. David Onyemata, defensive tackle. Ifeidi was signed, offensive tackle. Matt Collins, wide receiver. Mike Hughes, cornerback. Cornell Armstrong, cornerback. Tay Davis, linebacker. Bradley Pinion, punter. Keith Smith, fullback. He's back again. Caden Ellis, linebacker. Lorenzo Carter, defensive end. Those are just some of the guys that we did, you know, bring into the fold, so to speak. Any of those players, you know, that stand out to you as far as their importance in the stream of things of this coming season, either offensive or defensive side of the ball? Either of you.
Hey, Jordan, go ahead, since you got limited time there, sir.
I think Calais Campbell is one key signing, not only because he's very very productive player, but also I think he'll be a guy that can help mentor some of these young defensive linemen that we'll bring in. He could be a great mentor for a potential draft pick that we'll get into here a little bit later if that potential draft pick is there and the Falcons do select him. So he's a key signing. Jesse Bates is absolutely a key signing as well. Safety, very good in coverage, will also come up and hit you. And he's a guy who's very rarely penalized in the secondary. Also, and so I think he's also a definite key signing. Caden Ellis, linebacker brought over from the rival Aints, 7 sacks last year, versatile linebacker, a guy who can cover some, who can also get to the quarterback, which is, you know, always a need here in Atlanta. David Onyemata as well, providing some more beef up front, should help the Falcons have a very good run defense this year. Even the corners that they signed and traded for as well are also good run defenders. So I certainly think that that's going to be a strength of the Atlanta defense. And, you know, anytime you can make a team one-dimensional where all they really can do is pass the ball. That allows you to get to the quarterback and pin your ears back a little bit easier. So I think those are key signers as well. I mean, I'm sure there are others, but I don't want to name every single signer. So, Mr. Harris, go ahead, sir.
Oh, man, that's all right, because I'm, like I was telling Chris earlier, I am a kind of a novice at this because, see, I like to judge players once they get on my football field. But thing is that, as Chris alluded to, you got people that we had last year that contracts ended and we re-signed them. And key of which that I was looking at was Caleb McGarry. Now, if you wanted to see an over-the-summer project come to fruition, he was one. Because he was already, but he turned into Bane from Batman in one season. Because, I mean, I'm seeing veins popping out of this man's arm that I didn't see last year. And had a heart problem, you know, and was scaring me. But he was scaring me for a different reason this year because that man got big. So he took his offseason seriously and improved himself last year and showed what he had gained by his play. Because the Falcons, if nothing else, offensively, we could run. And I mean, we could run. We could roll grade and we could run. Now, the protection part, that's the iffy part. So I'm interested to see how that's going to work out for Taylor Heinicke as well as Desmond Ridder, since we picked up Taylor Heinicke as a free agent backup. And he knows what his job is. He's going to be backing up, assisting in the development of Desmond Ridder, who's been, you know, made the start. On the defensive side of the ball, I'm glad to see that poor Grady Jarrett has some help. There were people that were saying that the past couple of years, Grady Jarrett hadn't played up to expectations, but I don't know what they were looking at because when you saw last year, that man was doing the same thing he's been doing ever since he's been here, but he didn't have any help. The Calais Campbell there, and it was a couple of other people I'm going to have to look and see. But
I'll give you one name real quick, John. I'll give one name real quick, a name that I didn't mention prior to, and that is the defensive tackle, Eddie Goldman. Now, we signed Eddie Goldman prior, during not this offseason, but the offseason before, and he immediately retired. Former Chicago Bear, but now he has come out of retirement to join that group as well. So I'm actually thinking that we're going to have one of the strongest groups up front that we've had in several years, but that doesn't mean we shouldn't stop adding to that group.
Exactly.
No, that's true. That's true. And that's, I believe that's going to get me to what we do with this draft pick. Now, whenever we want to talk about that's going to segue into that because that's going to be kind of interesting what you do with number 8.
Yeah. So let's talk about the depth chart a little bit then. So Jordan actually kind of mentioned one of them, you know, he mentioned Eddie Goldman coming out of retirement. Let's talk defense first because that's been most important over these last couple of years and this offseason so far. So you have Campbell, Onyemata, Jarrett, Grady Jarrett, Bud Dupree, Caden Ellis, Troy Anderson, Lorenzo Carter, A.J. Terrell, Richie Grant, Bates, Okuda, and Hughes. That's your front. That's your starters as of right now, potentially. And then right behind them, you have Taquan Graham, you got Eddie Goldman, you got Timmy Horn, you got Ogadeji, there you go. Nate Lamon. I don't really know a lot about him. We got Michael Walker, AK-47, of course, Darren Hall, Jalen Hawkins, Michael Abernathy, and Cornell Armstrong, along with D. Alford, is still here as well. So when you're talking about your first and second and interchanging and just depth, injuries, the whole nine yards, this time you don't have just a precipitous fall off as we've had in the past. You know what I'm saying? You know, if this guy can get to the quarterback, this guy also can get to the quarterback. If this guy can make a tackle, this guy also can make a tackle. If this guy can backtrack and stay with his receiver, he's got to do it too. So I think that right there, plus, of course, and I forget his name already right there, our defensive coordinator, who's an expert on the defensive line side of the ball, but also, of course, focusing on getting to the quarterback, having all of this talent around him, excuse me, the utilization, I think is going to be huge in basically stopping people for the first time ever. Because if anybody noticed, again, last year, look at all those close games that we were in. If we just had to stop here, stop there, stop everywhere, how many more games would we have won just by default, despite all the other crazy stuff that was happening, right? So that's on the defensive side. And Jordan John, y'all want to mention that? Because I want to go over the offense real quick, too, and then we can talk about both.
Cool? Well, I guess the name you're looking for is Ryan Nielsen. That's the defensive coordinator. Came over from the enemy, New Orleans. But, you know, they have had quite a ferocious defense over in recent years. One thing, though, I think people need to be cautious because I'm hearing a lot of people say, well, we won't draft this player or that player because he prefers bigger defensive ends. But I don't think that it's proper to automatically assume that he's going to run the same scheme here that he ran in New Orleans. For one, he wasn't in charge of the defense in New Orleans. He was defensive line coach. So, you know, he didn't really have the authority to say whether they were going to run a 4-3 or a 3-4 anyway. And bottom line is, you know, most teams play nickel majority of the time anyway because most teams are using three wide receivers on a high percentage of the time. Now, obviously, there are various nickel looks. You can play nickel with four down, or you can play nickel with three down and three linebackers behind them. But ultimately, I think we need guys that can get to the quarterback, whether they're bigger defensive ends or whether they're the more slim, you know, speed rusher type guys.
That's a good point. We don't want to make that assumption just because. So everything is going to be brand new this year, you know, virtually, right? So this is going to be a learning process, you know, pretty much for everybody. Real quick on the offensive side, excuse me. But by the way, like I said, y'all, I'm feeling not my best, but I'm here. On the offensive side, on the front end, on the receivers, we got Drake London, obviously. We got the newly signed Matt Collins, Scott Miller. On the offensive line, you got Jake Matthews, Matt Hennessy, Drew Dahlman, Chris Lindstrom, and the aforementioned Caleb McGarry. Tight end, you got Kyle Pitts. And then, of course, you got Desmond Ridder. At running back, Tyler Algier. And then fullback, Keith Smith. Now, behind them, you got Frank Darby, Kadarius Hodge, Jared Bernhardt. I mentioned Afidi earlier. Jalen Mayfield, Ryan Nuzel, Justin Schaefer. We're going to see what he can do this year, definitely. Joshua Miles and Janu Smith. I don't really want to get into the third string, but that's your first and second layer when it comes to the offensive side of the ball. How deep do people think we are at those positions? That's kind of the premise of this draft as well, you know, as far as what you might do at that eighth spot. You got people saying all kind of stuff. I won't get into that just yet, but just on the offensive side, depth-wise, what do y'all think so far?
I like some of the things that we've done offensively, depth-wise. The gentleman, Hollins, the wide receiver that we picked up from the Raiders, a good possession receiver, good size on him, had kind of a breakout campaign for Oakland last year. He's also a guy who I think can step in and do a decent Drake London impersonation if something happens to Drake. And also another wide receiver that we picked up from one of our other hated rivals, the Yuccaneers, and that's Scotty Miller, slot guy, speed guy, somebody who will be able to run up the seams and put some pressure on the opposing team's safeties, which should help us in terms of, you know, just making the passing game a little bit more explosive. You know, a lot of the other offensive pieces, I think, are holdovers. But, you know, I'm just excited to see, you know, the growth in guys like Caleb McGarry. Can he take another step, even farther than what he played last year? Don't know how much better Chris Lindstrom can get just for some fact that Last season, he was the best guard in all of the NFL. So it'd be interesting to see if he can repeat that season as well. But, you know, as always, trench play is going to be key. As John mentioned earlier, we run the ball very well. Our offensive line is a great run blocking offensive line. It's going to be interesting to see if we can take the next step and be better at pass protection if we decide to open up the offense a little bit more this year.
Any comments on that, John?
Everything left Chris Lindstrom causes me nightmares.
Oh, wow.
Because Dalvin at center, I'm glad Ritter has children already, because if Dalvin snaps that ball as crazy as he has been snapping it, that man won't have kids for the rest of his life.
That's a valid point, sir.
Mayfield beside him, you know, there used to be some bad turnstiles I used to sneak through to get to the movies at Green Rock. The ball and start playing for the Falcons. And then on that end, Matthews is getting old. Now, I wasn't really impressed with him from the beginning when he first came here, but, you know, people said he was serviceable and all that, and they didn't want to upgrade. And, you know, you just got used to him just letting people go by him. So that left side, which is the most important side, supposedly, for an offensive line, is suspect for pass blocking. So, and like Chris, you were saying, we would have good starters. And that line, like we had back in 2016, they worked as a unit because they didn't have any injuries on that line. So they got a chance to gel together and to cover for each other. Once you get that type of chemistry going, even if you put somebody in to rest one or two of them, they'll cover for him. They'll absorb the fact that he wasn't in on a lot of the plays or whatever. Last year, it was a situation where none of that was really going on. Not pass blocking side. Plus the fact that that stretch running that we do, we are susceptible to the A-gap blitz on either side of the center. We didn't have anybody that could stop it. You had to get rid of the ball or a run play, catch an off of guard. You know, that would be the only thing that would save us. So that is the most worrisome part of the team right now. I'm more confident in the defensive adjustments and acquisitions we have than I am what I see with the offense.
It's definitely something to agree with you, John. Just from what we saw last year, I mean, you can't get around that. It actually happened, you know. So that goes into, how do we go into that? Now we can segue, you know, what do we do with that first round pick? You know, do we do something on the offensive side to do something on the line again? Do we continue to concentrate on the defensive side of the ball to continue to strengthen that and get them the best player, whether it be a cornerback or edge? You have a lot of people talking running back to say we might as well go ahead and get the best running back in the draft, things of that nature. So let's go ahead and go on that. And, Jordan, you were about to say something, it sounded like?
I was just saying to kind of segue as well. You know, I totally agree with Mr. Harris on that. That is definitely one of the weak points on the team, particularly the guard center, the center and the left guard, because we know the right guard is strong. And so, you know, one thing I was going to say is I know a lot of people are totally opposed to taking an offensive lineman with the eighth pick, but I'm not among that number of people. Now, mind you, if you take an offensive lineman that high, my certainly expectations are for him to develop into a perennial Pro Bowler, an All-Pro, an NFL All-Pro. But if you take a lineman and he becomes that, then you certainly made a worthy pick, because I know it's not sexy. I know you don't have great highlights of offensive linemen, you know, leaping in the air and scoring touchdowns and whatnot, but they're a key part of the team. I don't care how much the game changes. The offensive line is always going to be a key part of the football team. And now, I wouldn't want to take a guy who's going to be strictly a guard his entire career at number eight. But if you get me a young guy and you tell me he can start at left guard this year and then eventually kick out to left tackle and replace Jake Matthews, oh, yes, count me in on that, gentlemen.
Yeah, There's one guy that I'm looking at on one of the mocks. They say Peter Skoronski from Northwestern. This dude looks huge. I don't know much about him because I hadn't been paying attention on the offensive line side of the ball. I won't lie. But like you said, Jordan, the one thing about the offensive line is your quarterback stays on the field for a decade if you got the right guy, right, depending on what side he's on or whatever. And or your running game always has holes for a decade, depending on who that person, you know. Your timeline as far as having a really good player at a young age develop into that, definitely if you're picking them that high, it has to happen, right? But, you know, there's always that side of where people say, well, you have a lot of people who are offensive linemen that were drafted second, third, fourth, fifth round and everything. So if you go that high, you know, it almost has to be a sure thing, although we know the draft is, you know, not a guarantee. But you're right. I know a lot of people are not going that route as far as what their mindset is. But it is still a position of need. Like, nobody can just say, like, you know, even though the line did good at the run blocking, like John said, the pass blocking was still something that we kind of, you know, it can still be improved upon, right, over time. And then, you know, like I said, Jake Matthews eventually does have to be replaced. So that is something to think about.
Right. And I'll just add, let me go back to something John mentioned. Under no circumstances do I see Jalen Mayfield starting at left guard. I just don't see that happening. You know, I don't think that he could have improved that much in one season on the bench to turn from the great turnstile he was into a guy who's solid enough in that position. You mentioned Peter Skoronski, 6'4", 313 pounds, out of Northwestern. He's one of the candidates at that spot. Honestly, there are four guys who are candidates, in my opinion. You also have Paris Johnson, offensive tackle out of Ohio State, 6'6", 313 pounds. Definitely a guy who's worthy of consideration in that area. Also, Darnell Wright, offensive tackle from Tennessee. As you guys know, I'm usually partial to taking SEC guys because you know they've been through the battles. You know they face the best defensive linemen in college. When they come out of the SEC, he's 6'5", 333 pounds. So he definitely has that good size to be a road grader for the Atlanta Falcons team. And also a guy who I'm partial to because I'm biased when it comes to Georgia Bulldogs, Broderick Jones. Now, scouts have different opinions on him. Some think he could be a top 10, top 15 pick. Some think he's an early second-round pick. 6'5", 311 pounds, and he also has some experience playing on different spots of the line, including guard. So I think he's a guy who could absolutely step right in, do a good job at guard, and then later kick out to tackle and be your starting left tackle.
So here's the deal. Oh, go ahead, John.
Oh, go ahead, because yeah, I was going to go to something. But go ahead. You might touch on it. So,
well, what I was going to say is, since we're talking on the offensive line side of the ball, the other offensive player is the running back. So when you're talking about our offensive line and what we did at running back, we all know that Tyler did a great job, even though he didn't start. He wasn't even really getting touches until, I think, week four. And he still got 1,000 yards. So that says a lot right there. But you still have a lot of people out there who say, well, why not get Mr. Robinson at running back as, you know, one of your top offensive players in college football? So let's allude to that fact to say, if you don't get an offensive lineman, let's just say at the top pick, and you get a running back plus what we already have, how does that play a part in regards to saying this is definitely going to improve the offense as it is now with bringing him on board or any running back or, you know, as far as that goes? Because I don't think – well, one, I'm going to go ahead and say it. We ain't getting a wide receiver at 8. I'll throw that out there right now, okay? But at the running back position, that's a – come on now. Come on. So at the running back position, that is probably more of a possibility than any other position on the offensive side. So let's just say if it was Mr. Robinson, Bijan Robinson, how would that play into what the Falcons would do technically the rest of the draft? And how would he play a part? Like, how would that – explain to our audience, how would that work if we were to go that route? As far as the benefits, the pros, cons, the whole 9 yards.
Well, Bijan Robinson, running back out of Texas, 5'11", 215 pounds, 4.46 40-yard dash, very powerful runner. He also was one of the top guys in forcing missed tackles as Tyler Allgeier was the previous year coming out of college. Definitely he'll make us a more dynamic running game for sure. Like I said, he has the ability to be to play on third downs as well. I'm just not big on taking a running back that high in the draft, fellas, to be honest with you. Just for the one of the things I think about with that is that has one of the shortest shelf lives of any position. And I would hate to pick a running back that high. And even if he dominated for his first 3 or 4 years, and I hate to mention him because I'm a big fan of his, but Todd Gurley, look how quickly he faded out when the injury started setting in. Now, granted, Gurley did have an ACL tear in college, so Bijan is probably a little bit better when you talk about injuries, not having injuries early. But, you know, that's still just the most physically demanding position in the league. They take the most hits, so it has the shortest shelf life. Now, if we were to trade back, like there has been some rumors, and pick up an extra second-round pick or something like that, then I would feel a little bit better about taking him. I just feel like if you take a running back in the top 10, he should be a guy that you plan on giving 75% of the carries to. Now, with having Tyler Allgeier here, who rushed for over 1,000 yards as a rookie, I think he deserves more than 25% of the touches, so you'd be looking at more of a 50-50 split. I absolutely think we'd be, and plus we have Cordarrelle Patterson as well, who's more of a, you know, Swiss Army knife, guy who can do a little of everything. Do I think we need to take a running back in this draft? Yes, I do. Do I think that we need to take one at number 8? No, I do not, gentlemen.
About not taking him at number 8, because Caleb Huntley, I think he messed his Achilles up. But I think he's going to be ready, November, might be ready end of October, head into November. And if Tyler Allgeier is your man, you just got him last year. You just bought that car last year. All right? Why are you going to sit up here and buy another one when you can't drive but one at a time? You know? And you got two good ones that can spell him. Now, drafting him in the fourth round, or drafting that next running back in the second, third, or fourth round, fine. Do that. But I can't go. I can't go along with getting a running back, no matter who they are, because an injuries do play a part in everything, but. You don't have the money, you don't have the cap space to cover everything coming out of the draft and lock yourself down into a long-term commitment to somebody at every position. Can't do it.
646-652-4479. Don't forget, you can call in through the show. We have some people who are watching the show on the YouTube, so thanks to Torian watching. Steve from Atlanta Bird Gang is on watching as well. Appreciate that. One thing I wanted to mention is
real quick, Chris, if I could, just to say, John, that was an excellent point you just made, and that's one thing you have to think about when drafting these guys. If you draft these guys high and they all work out, you're going to have to pay them a nice amount of money on their next contract. And so you've already taken two skill position players in the first round the last 2 years in the top 8. So if you take a running back in the top 8 as well, you're looking at having a lot of money, 3 or 4 or 5 years down the line. You're looking at having a bunch of money into offensive skill position players, which puts us right back in the realm of the way the team was built during the Thomas Dimitroff era. That's something I want to avoid. I would love our salary cap to be a whole lot more balanced between offensive and defense, from now going forward. And you're putting yourself in a position to be an offensive-heavy salary cap team once again if you continue to draft only offensive skill position players in the top 10.
I had to do the retroactive boo on Thomas Dimitroff's name being mentioned on the show. So, that being said,
they had him on as a guest today on 92.9.
Really?
Yes. And trying to go back and check on things that.
My goodness. Well,
oh Now, you think that was shocking. I hope, Jordan, I hope you're sitting down, because Thomas Dimitrov said.
I am.
Did you hear that?
Say it again, John.
Go right ahead. No, I am. I heard some of it, though. Go right ahead, sir.
He picked Vic Beasley knowing he didn't have a passion for football.
Oh, yes. No, he actually admitted it on the air?
Jordan, did you hear that?
Yeah.
Oh, man, I'm glad I did. I'm glad I wasn't listening. I would. Oh, boy. Man. Oh, that hurts. Oh, my goodness.
But
oh.
Years later, away from the organization, can't get fired, can't get no warning letter, can't get suspended. Oh, yeah, we can tell tales out of school now.
Wow. So here's the deal then. So if we don't get Oh, that's what I was going to say. So one of the things that I was just looking at, the fact that all the other teams or all the other pundits and article writers and things of that nature, none of them have Robinson going that high either. So why would the Falcons take him at that particular pick when you have some people saying, well, he's late first round, if anything. You know what I'm saying? You had one team, you had one mock that showed him getting picked like 10th or something like that, right? But why would the Falcons go all out when at the end of the day, and Jordan kind of alluded to it as well, you don't typically get a running back that high. And if you did, you're definitely going to pay him long term, and we don't want to go that route when we have all these other players that we worked so hard to get the depth on the side of the ball that we really needed. You know what I'm saying? So that's going to be a big deal. So if we don't go offense, let's knock that out. The next thing would be
– Quick update. Quick update, Chris, before you go to the next thing. I just checked the XFL stats on Vic Beasley. He's played 7 games. He has 7 tackles and 1/2 a sack in the XFL, gentlemen, in the XFL, in 7 games. So, yeah, just thought that would be an interesting stat to add to
the
show.
Oh, wow. Well, that basically says and proves how bad Thomas Dimitrov is. Because if he can't even go to the XFL to say, here's my redemption period right here. I'm a half a sack. I don't know what to say.
One half a sack, sir. One tackle per game. 7 games,
that's,
7 tackles.
That's about as damning as you can get on a position player that was deep. Wow, that's. I'm just really sad about that right now. That I don't even know what to say. I really, 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 really don't. Hey, but hey, he's playing, I guess. And you know what? Despite that, there's going to be a team that will put a flyer out on. Because somehow they'll determine how that will was a correlate into going into the NFL. And hey, maybe he'll be a special teams player. I don't know. But he can't be on no defensive line of any team that I know about. I'm just saying. So wow, that's again. It just shows how bad it was for that period of time and how much better we could have been if we had somebody just a little bit more making those decisions than who we did. Because you saw what happened over that period of time, and now the changeover at this point over the last 3 years, how drastically different it is now. So we can appreciate it for what it is, but that's messed up. That's all I can say. 646-652-4479 is the line to the show, y'all. We got our co-host Jordan Jackson, and we got a special guest, Mr. John Harris, talking Atlanta Falcons football. But just as a reminder, just real quick, something really cool happened yesterday.
Dan Hunter, and here's Young. Backtrack, 5-2. Young, let's go. Oh! Ice cold.
Did you hear the person in the background as well? I remember hearing it on the telecast, but the person using a little bit of language there because they just couldn't believe what just happened. They were like, holy. Yeah,
right.
They were shocked. They were shocked.
Well, see, now that you did that, Chris, I got to say a few words real quick, okay? That's 3 straight games. That's 3 straight 30-plus point games in the playoffs for Mr. Trey Young, okay? Included in those 3 straight 30-point games, there's a 15-assist game and a 13-assist game among those 3, plus another 6 assists. That's over 30 assists combined in those 3 playoff games. after the Miami series and the first game of this series, I'm starting to hear talk among fans as well as among the talking heads on TV that Trae Young could not play in the playoffs. Shut up. I don't want to hear it again, okay? Three straight 30-point games. He's leading the entire playoffs in assists. Trae Young is a big-time performer. He lives for these moments. He is our superstar, so just learn to live with it.
There you go, George.
No
problem. And for the audience, we will be doing some Hawks talk in the near future. Hopefully we can win game six and make it a game seven. And we definitely, you'll be hearing us do a whole two-hour show of Hawks talk at that point. 646-652-4479. So back to Falcons. So if we don't go offense at all at that top eight pick and we don't move around a little bit, what do we do on the defensive end then? Because at this point now, you're looking at getting a player that could be the eventual starter probably sooner than later, possibly depending on who you get, and or definitely a key piece on the depth side of the team. So is it going to be your edge rusher? Is it going to be your cornerback? So, John, I don't know if you have a preference or not of where we want to go. All right, I got George. All right, George, appreciate being able to join. George was only able to come on.
Real quick, before we go ahead, I mean, obviously, you talk about going to the defensive side. I obviously would prefer to go up front over cornerback, even though all of them are need. If somehow, I don't know if it's going to happen, but if somehow Jalen Carter of the University of Georgia slips to number eight, run that card up there as fast as you can. As a matter of fact, go hire Usain Bolt to work for the Falcons for a day and have him run the card up there, okay? Because I think that's your guy if he's picked. Obviously, I'd love to get Will Anderson out of Alabama, but I believe he's going to be long gone. But he's another edge guy I'm interested in. Also interested in Tyree Wilson out of Texas Tech if he's around. Also, I'm a Nolan Smith guy. Now, maybe he'd be better to get if we traded back, but just that level of physical talent as well as being an intelligent football player, I think if you're going to take a risk on a guy, you know, due to physical talent, he's a guy you do it with. One of the main things I look for in an edge rusher is a guy that has the ability to bend and flex his way around the corner, and Nolan is as flexible as he gets. Ran like a 4.39 40, so he's as fast as a wide receiver or a running back. And one thing about it, you can't look too much into stats for UGA defensive players because they rotate a whole bunch of guys up front, and plus they blow a lot of teams out, so they're sitting quite a bit, and they don't put up the stats. We also know he got injured last year, but those are some of the main guys I like. And I guess after that up front, the last guy we'll mention will be Miles Murphy out of Clemson. I know a lot of people also talk about Kyle Van Ness out of Iowa, but I am not comfortable with taking him at number eight, but he would be somebody I could understand taking if you had a trade down. Gentlemen, I got to go duty calls. Enjoy chopping it up with you guys for a short time. I will rejoin the show, Chris, if possible, before the end.
All right, appreciate it, Jordan. Talk to you soon, man. Thanks again for calling in.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
So to follow up on Jordan, one thing actually he mentioned, I actually didn't get a chance to pull it up, but he mentioned about stats, okay? And in college football, there are a lot of people that just go bananas when it comes to stats. Now, sometimes it's very evident when you have a player with the statistical, you know, background and things of that nature, accomplishments, but it always does not translate. Quarterback is one of those positions. And earlier on Twitter, I went through a whole bunch of quarterbacks that had all the stats in the world, but they didn't make it in the NFL. And we're talking about top-tier guys. We're talking about the guys who in 2 years were averaging 45 touchdowns a season type of a deal and didn't really work out in the NFL. Marcus Mariota, just one of them, just that y'all know who I'm talking about right there, right? So when it comes on the defensive side as well, Jordan just kind of mentioned it. When you have real depth in the college football game, you know, it's hard for someone to say somebody's going to have 10 sacks, 12 sacks or whatnot when you have that kind of depth. And we have a back-to-back national championship team to prove that, right? So when it comes to the needs of the team and saying we're going to have that proverbial edge rusher, You know, Jordan mentioned a couple of them. I'll throw them out there again, just the top 10 ones. You got Will Anderson Jr. out of Alabama, Tyree Wilson out of Texas Tech, Nolan Smith out of UGA, obviously, Miles Murphy out of Clemson. Jordan mentioned them, Lucas Van Ness out of Iowa, Will McDonald, the fourth out of Iowa State, B.J. Ojulari out of LSU. I cannot get this one from Northwestern. I'll just call him Double A. Keon White out of Georgia Tech, and then Felix Aluduke Uzomah out of Kansas State. So those are your top 10. Now, myself, I definitely would go towards, if it got down to it, Nolan Smith and or Will Anderson, but Will probably won't be there as far as a position of need, as far as the other teams that will be above us. But again, that's why I said, you know, can you move up or not? And that's kind of where, if it got down to it, do you go tackle and go after Jalen if he falls far enough? And I think if he goes to six, do you think about going up? You know, do whatever you got to do to get to six to go ahead and make sure you get him to open it up even more depth-wise on our team and then for the future, you know, for the Falcons on the line. So, John, I don't know what kind of impressions you have on any of these edge guys just yet before we go into cornerbacks, but what do you think as far as that goes? Since we've done what we've done on the free agent side as far as depth and pass rushers and things of that nature, do you go into the draft and say, this is the preeminent guy?
I would say no. I would say no. And the thing is about that, when you were talking about stats just a second ago, it made me think back to rankings that people were giving for linemen. You have to look at the competition that those people played. You just can't go on the stats. Okay, this man might have been a number one offensive lineman, offensive tackle. But what conference did he play in? If he didn't play in the SEC, it's in question. If he wasn't playing against SEC teams, it's in question. Because you weren't playing against top-flight defensive talent. Defensive linemen going against offensive line talent. If you weren't playing in the SEC, hey, man, you know, all of that's up to the question. Now, that is what the scouting department's job is to do. You go out there and you have, a laundry list, and you go and find the best talent available at the position of need. Okay? Now, I'm going to hold you accountable, Mr. Scout, Mr. Director of Pro Scouting, Mr. Offensive Coordinator. I'm going to hold you accountable, Mr. Offensive or Defensive Coordinator, for your laundry list, okay? I'm going to hold you, Mr. Scout. Did you bring back the best thing on that laundry list that you could find? Individual Scout, did you grade this person correctly when you went out and looked for that? Because, see, a lot of times, and I've made the example many times before, the Falcons scouting department, I wouldn't send them out for a tube or toothpaste because they're liable to bring back a tube of preparation just because it's in a white and red tube.
Yeah.
So, because, you didn't bring back the right thing. Peter Combs, that was another one that Dimitrov was talking about. He knew the man wasn't good, but got him anyway. Man, come on. And then here we are. All right. Oh, we got Peter Combs. Oh, he did this. He did that. This, that. All right. Put him on the field. I mean, it was one of the worst disappointments I've ever seen. You know,
well,
but.
And again, that's where it comes down to. It's like this new, the new regime that's been here. You can't change a whole team in one season. You can kind of start doing it in two. That third season is when you're going to see your precipitous change from where you started to now, whether it be on the contract side and or on the talent side, if you got people who really know what they're doing. And you also have a good coaching staff as well. And we know we have all of those elements with this Falcons team as of right now. And again, that Vic Beasley pick, along with other people I will not name on the air right now because my blood pressure will just go up, we know that the due diligence was not done. It was not done properly. It was haphazard at best. right? I can use other words, but I'm trying to be nice right now, right? So when you look at the longevity of a winning team over time, and you look at all the other teams, whether it be in our conference or in the AFC or whatnot, and you see the same line in regards to positions and what side of the ball, the trenches, the whole nine yards, and you know those people are doing work. And it's like, how can we just have that many people with ineptitude on our team, in our organization, over a period of time, to where you can't get nobody that can stop anybody on the defensive side of the ball? That's kind of wild, right? And or you can't get nobody to actually pass block properly, so your quarterback ain't on the ground all the time. That's kind of wild when all these other teams have that. So what's going on, right? So that's where, like I said, people underestimate sometimes, I think, how important that scouting department really is. I mean, those people are getting paid too, by the way. Like, they're getting stipends for traveling and all this kind of stuff. I'm like, what are y'all doing? Y'all playing Xbox all day? Like, what are y'all doing? You know, so that's where we're going to really see this these last couple of years. And we've already seen it, really. We've seen it with Tyler. You know, we've seen it with other players that we have that are on the team right now that are producing, right? And now with this particular draft, you know, last year's draft was very important. This year's draft is going to be very important, because now you're mingling in everything else that they did on the free agency side specifically for the defense. So that's kind of going into, depending on the edge rusher part or even getting a tackle if it's Jalen Carter, do you go cornerback? Because with the edge rusher part of it or getting somebody else who can pass rush, right, that's helping whoever you have in that backfield as a corner in the safeties, because that's giving them a few more seconds to actually stay with their guy. Because now – you know, you don't have somebody just wide open making bacon pancakes in the backfield before they throw the ball, because now we're on them. Like, we're on them lickety-split now, right? But if, let's say we don't advance that edge, do we go cornerback and give the line a couple of more chances to get to the quarterback? Cornerbacks that are, you know, possible for us right now. Let me see if I can find them. So you have several. Now, we know the one name that everybody's been bantering around is Christian Gonzalez. But you do have the one that's ahead of him, which will be Devon Witherspoon from Illinois. Christian Gonzalez, as I mentioned, is from Oregon. Deontay Banks, Maryland. Joey Porter Jr. from Penn State. Now, I've seen him play a little bit. Emmanuel Forbes, Mississippi State. Cam Smith, South Carolina. Tyreek Stevenson, Miami, Florida. DJ Turner from Michigan. Clark Phillips, that's another good one. I've seen him play, Utah. And then Mr. Ringo from Georgia. So I don't know if you know any of these guys on off the top, John, but any of those stand out to you to say if we got him at the as a top 10 pick in the draft, can he translate into the NFL quickly, or will it be a year or two? What do you think?
Well, I always count on a year or two at any position because the speed of the game is going to be surprising versus what it was that you were facing. The speed of the game is going to increase exponentially by you being out there with the best in the world, because everybody's going to be starting all of their veterans that they have in those positions or draft picks. So, you know, hey, you're really going to be going at the cream of the crop no matter what position you go in. Now, my Georgia bias would say get Ringo. However, there are other people around the country that could play cornerback a little bit better than him. And, you know, I've seen a couple of mock drafts where they put Witherspoon, was it?
Let's see.
I might have gotten his name wrong. But
Christian Gonzalez or Witherspoon, yeah.
Yeah, they put him as someone to watch or someone to get. So, as a matter of fact, we did pick up a cornerback in free agency also from Detroit, correct?
Correct.
So, and we already have a good quarterback on the other side. Already have a good one on the other side. Now, what I'm perceiving is that we are drafting for depth. We have the luxury of getting someone to bag up these people that's not, like you said before, a cliff diving drop off from the person that starts.
Yeah.
And really, at all positions, that is the most important thing. Because, you know, now last year we didn't have the money. We didn't have the money to do that. Plus the fact we lost, and this is an example of that I had forgotten about. We lost a linebacker last year because we couldn't afford to pay him.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
We lost. Now, everybody was talking about Dean Pease, how good he was, how bad he was. He wasn't able to do this. He wasn't able to do that. But because of the salary cap and our salary cap issues, we lost a very important piece of the defense. Okay? Now, we raised that man up from infancy, so to speak. We raised him up from infancy. And then we had to let him go. Now, you now have to build somebody else up on the job training while a coach's job is in the balance. You know, so, hey, you know, a lot of the things that people were complaining about, it was basically out of the coaching staff's control, with the exception of one thing, and we'll get to that when you get to it. So
yeah.
You know, I always thought about that.
Yeah, you brought up a good point, and that was a big deal because, I mean, one, he was leading in tackles. Like, you take somebody like that off the team, and, you know, it matters. It's something that is a stark contrast. You don't have that assured tackle, especially in the box when you need it. So that kind of goes into, again, like I said, and Jeff, I think it was Jeff Okuda from Detroit that we got, the young player. We're going to find out, you know, because he was a top five pick as well in the draft, you know. So we're going to see, and he's in the start. As of right now on the depth chart, he's a starter. So that kind of goes into whether or not you're getting the edge or not. You know, some people say, well, since we got Campbell, we might not go with the rusher, but Campbell might only be here for 1 year, right? And
right.
You have some other people who might be coming up, you know, over time and things of that nature. So it's going to be very interesting if they go corner or edge or even the tackle, like I said, Jalen Carter, and move some people around or whatnot. Because at the end of the day, we got to be able to get those stops. Like so many games this last year alone, if we had just gotten a couple of stops, we win 10 games last year. With all the crazy stuff, we win 10 games last year, and we couldn't get that one stop. And, of course, we can go back a couple years ago, but we won't talk about that particular game. So I think at the end of the day, it's best to go this route because all the other teams that are great over decades, these all decade teams and stuff like that, they stop people and they do it all the time. You know, it's like their bread and butter. It's their identity. And that's the one thing that the Falcons have lacked for all of these years. Again, DP said it. This defensive team has been the bottom of the league for almost two decades. When your defensive coordinator says that, he knows the history. He wasn't here forever, right? That hurts to hear it out loud again, 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 but even more so when you got the people in the organization actually saying it, because guess what? That goes into the people who, hey, guess what? They're in charge of getting the people that we need, and you messed this up, right? Decisions like that matter over time. And all we want to see is a competitive team. We're not asking for that much. We just want a chance, right? So that's why I say with Ritter being there and putting this team around him to where you have all these different specialty pieces, whether it be your wide receivers, your tight ends, your running backs, fullbacks, offensive line, and then on the defensive side, where if you got a quarterback that's not making mistakes and can get your team down the field and you're running the ball, controlling the tempo and everything, and your team can get stops, you win a lot of games doing that. Ask the Patriots, right? Ask Tampa Bay the last couple of years, right? Ask Kansas City to an extent, right? Ask all these teams that have won. Ask the Philadelphia Eagles who won a Super Bowl. How they win a Super Bowl back in, you know what I'm saying? So it's one of those things where, you know, why can't we do it? And here it is now. It looks like we can do it, and we're starting to put all those things together, and it's exciting to see. But it's just going to be a matter of what's really going to happen tomorrow. Because, again, the draft is a draft. Anything could happen tomorrow. All of a sudden, the Falcons could have the number two pick in the draft tomorrow. We don't know, right? You know, they might change their minds all completely different and be like, okay, yeah, we're going to go get this guy. This is our guy. So that's what you got to do in the draft. If that's your guy, you got to do what's necessary to get him, right? Sacrifice whatever to be able to get that guy. So that's the edge rusher and corner talk as far as that goes. Now, I really haven't talked about linebackers because I think we're not going to do too much. I mean, you know, we have a lot of linebackers. I think we're good there as far as that goes. Troy Anderson is going to get a chance to prove himself even more than he did last year. I think he's going to be a great player. Any other positions that you can think of, John, that you think are going to be noticeable over these? Because, oh, that's what I was going to do. So here are the picks that we actually do have. If I can find it real quick. Let's see. I had it here a second ago. Well, I can't find them now.
You're talking about order of picks?
Correct.
Okay. I thought, man, I had it also. I need to reset the timing on the phone because that thing goes after about 20 seconds. Okay. Okay, we know we got number eight.
Oh, there it is. Okay, I got them. So, first round, we got the eighth pick. Second round, we still have the 44th pick. Third round, we still have the 75th. Fourth round, we have 110 and 113, so almost back-to-back. And then we don't pick again until the seventh, where we have 224 and 225. So some of this is going to be really predicated on what you do in those first two rounds, on whether or not you keep those last two picks at seven and package them for something to move up or something like that, or package one of the fourth rounds and the seventh round for somebody, you know, on the technical side. But, you know, then it's a matter of, are you going for the best player at a certain point, right? You know, at a particular position, you know, do you go a wide receiver, for instance? You know, we did do some wide receiver movement in free agency, but do you go after somebody else? Do you get another speedster, for example, to, you know, get down the field to make the safeties worry about stuff? You know, do you get, I don't know, I'm trying to think right now. We got enough tight ends to save the world right now, so I don't think we're getting the tight end anymore. At running back, because you have a lot of different running backs that are going to be available besides Robinson. At that point, like I said, you don't really get many running backs until the second, third round, maybe even the fourth round sometimes, right? So you have that opportunity to get some talent as far as that goes. Offensive line, you know, depth as far as that goes, and maybe find that diamond in the rough again as well. You were mentioning Kelly Ringo at cornerback. Is he a real press cover corner, or is he more of a roamer? What would we prefer on this team at this point? And really, do you just let the safeties handle that kind of a deal? I don't know. I think I would rather have somebody who's more of a cover corner in that particular case, press coverage and things, because that's not something we've been good at. AJ, and then just whatever else happens kind of a deal. Oliver is not here no more. He's pretty good at that. But, you know, I would rather have some people who stop people at the line from getting separation right off the jump and or can catch you, doggone it, and swipe away that ball and or get an interception. One of the things that we really need to be able to do is get interceptions. We have not been a big turnover team over the last couple of years. Now, with that line as it is now, I think that's going to improve tremendously, but you still have to have the cornerback that has the hands, the vision to be able to say, I got this. I'm taking this to the house, right? Go ahead, John.
And what I'm going to say, looking at the draft picks, I wouldn't be surprised if we trade that first round pick and move down.
Really?
I wouldn't be surprised if we do that, because we are still in need of a lot of pieces, even though we address a lot of things in free agency. We're still in need of a lot of pieces. And just like now you only have one pick in the second round, one pick in the third round. Now, that's Skoronski, the lineman, the offensive lineman they were talking about.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know if I would dedicate a first-round draft pick to him. I don't know if I would do that. Second round, well, you know, Dimitrov did get, did he get Lindstrom first and then McGarry? Because he came back into the first round and got one of those two.
I think it was Lindstrom first.
Okay, he got Lindstrom first and then came back in the first round and grabbed McGarry. Well, we need pass protection help. So I might would go along with him at 8. Now that I think about that, but I need at least 2 second round picks for what it is that we need as far as corner, as well as. And I know I'm going to run into some resistance as far as it's concerned.
Wide receiver.
Well, I mean, I just don't think you'd get one at the top of the in the first round. But anything after that, I mean, I would – okay, because, see, this is where we – like I said, we got Drake. We have – where are we at? Matt Collins, Scott Miller, and then you got Frank Darby, Cardale Hodge, Jared Bernhardt, and Rashawn Henry. You got Josh Ali. I really don't know who he is at all. So if it got down to it, yeah, do you put somebody else out there competition and knock one of those guys out? Sure. You know what I'm saying? Again, whether it be a speedster, whether it be a possession receiver, whether it be a mixture of the two, I wouldn't mind being able to do that. But it has to be somebody that has that essence of, they could grow into a threat on your team type of a person. You're not just getting somebody just for the sake of getting somebody. You need to be getting somebody that can replace somebody that's already on the team possibly, that's down in the depth, so to speak, and can possibly be on the field, you know, because.
Now, Chris, now, see, this was easy, Chris. This was easy, but now it's getting difficult. Because I have to go into what it is that I wanted to go into.
Go ahead.
Now, I look back at Tennessee as a team to determine what Arthur Smith's actual offensive game plan is, because see, now the covers are off. He's made Dave Ragone, who was the offensive coordinator, the quarterback coach. Charles London. You know, I went ad infinitum as far as talking about him and his lack of qualifications to be a quarterback coach. He has now taken the money he stole and gone back to Tennessee as their offensive coordinator slash quarterback coach after having done absolutely nothing here. All right? Knowing that and knowing the history and knowing what happened with Tennessee last year and the fact that they are now want Malik Willis and they may be shopping Tannehill, okay? Now, the only thing that Tennessee has as a claim to fame as far as the offense is concerned is Derrick Henry,
yeah.
Okay? The quarterback threw the ball occasionally. My question now is, due to the number one lack of training that you gave your starting quarterback Mariota, your rookie that you drafted and pumped up on draft day, talking about how mature he was and what he did at Cincinnati and all of this type of stuff, the fact that you didn't play him until you were forced to play him, because don't think that Arthur Smith came to that conclusion on his own.
Yeah.
Not at all. He was told to play him, okay? I don't know whether it was Arthur Blank. I don't know if it was the general manager. It's a thing where when I look back at Tennessee and I look at what we did, Arthur Smith, in my opinion, at this point, based on what I have seen, there is not a lot of emphasis on the quarterback position. Matter of fact, I got to the point sometimes last year that the quarterback was was just a nuisance. I'm going to run the ball. Okay? That's where I had gotten to last year. Because let's go back a little bit further. Matt Ryan had completed his first year here with Arthur Smith. During the offseason, you made a play for Deshaun Watson, knowing that if you did not land Deshaun Watson, or whether you did or not, you were going to have to let Matt Ryan go. You knew you were going to have to do that. So you went and rolled the dice, all right? Didn't get it. So Matt Ryan has got to go. You go and get Mariota. You could have gotten Mariota while Matt Ryan was here as a backup. You could have done that then.
Yeah.
Okay? But you were really stuck and had to put somebody in that quarterback position just to tide you over until you got the money or could go back into the draft again and get somebody. That's why the Ritter pick was a knee-jerk reaction. All right? You get Ritter. You don't have a quarterback coach there to coach anybody. Only quarterback coaching this man was getting was from Jordan Palmer prior to the draft, and thank God he's working with Jordan Palmer now because he didn't get any quarterback training while he was here.
Yeah. A good point.
Now, Ritter is here with Dave Ragone. Okay? He's not going to have Jordan Palmer on staff. He's going to have Dave Ragone. My faith in Dave Ragone, you couldn't measure it with a spoon. So, I'm not sure that Arthur Smith values quarterbacks the same way that we used to value quarterbacks when you had a Mike Smith, when you had a Shanahan. Okay? Because, see, Shanahan, and everybody can talk about Shanahan all they want to. This man took Mr. Irrelevant and made something out of it. I mean, 9 quarterbacks were picked before you got to Mr. Irrelevant at the end of the draft on a throwaway pick.
Yeah, he almost got San Francisco to the Super Bowl. So, yeah.
You know, that's what really throws my thinking into chaos as far as any of those positions that require a cornerback. Because what he really wants, from what I'm seeing out of wide receiver, that a wide receiver can block. That's his most important function.
Well, and I definitely can see where you're coming from with it, but the only problem is you got to have a quarterback who can actually play to win. And so at a certain point, that quarterback has to make all the throws. They got to make smart decisions over a period of time, especially if the running game isn't working. You got to have somebody who can get the ball down the field accordingly. And so it's almost like you're fighting with like a magnet, you know, right? You can't really do that. So that's definitely going to be an interesting thing to kind of pay attention to during the rest of this offseason and going into training camp in regards to that, in regards to the direction that Ritter is getting. Because I'll mention this. I wish I could pull it up. I don't want to try to find it right now. But I, like I said, when it comes to quarterbacks and accomplishments and stats and over a period of time and things of that nature, it's still hit or miss, you know. Whether or not they went to a school that everybody knows about or not. Like Ben Roethlisberger didn't come from a school or a conference that anybody knows about. He's a 2-time Super Bowl champion, right? There's a whole list of them that didn't come from big schools, but they have 15-year careers in the NFL. They've got all the, you know what I'm saying? But then you do have the Colt McCoys of the world or Tim Tebow or Johnny Manziel, Johnny Football. Where are they at? Jameis Winston, Vince Young, right? You know? So when it comes to that, you have to look at it even keel a little bit to say, okay, does winning games in college matter? Do getting 45 touchdowns a year matter? You know, or do you have the skill and ability to lead your team to a win? And if coach and put in a good position, can you do it? Because that Joe Flacco got put in the Doug Williams, Washington Redskins, right? Grambling University, that's not an all-conference, you know, right? It's not. We know that for a fact. So there's a lot of examples to say, yeah, you do have some, you know, that came from, you know, this background or whatnot, but then you have the others that did not. You know, Joe Montana came from Notre Dame, but Joe Montana, you couldn't say like he was an all-world quarterback coming out of Notre Dame necessarily, right? You know, he didn't have the biggest arm in the world or anything like that, but he won games, right? You know, so that's what I'm looking at as far as if Arthur is, you know, going to continue to plug away and push this team over the top, he's going to have to take that position seriously. He's going to have to make sure that people are in place to make sure that Ritter gets all the help that he can get, whether it be off the field as far as the coaching X and O's, and then, of course, on the field. Because as much as we do run the ball, we're still going to have to get the ball to our receivers. Remember, we did what we did last year without our best tight end in Pitts, right?
Right.
So
right.
You got to take that in consideration. Pitts is going to be here, and I'm sorry. I don't see no way, no how that Pitts ain't going to get the ball properly from Ritter, just knowing what he did just last year. You see what I'm saying? There is an element of history going there. You can see that he could do all the things you need a quarterback to do and do them well. And he is the third most winning quarterback of all time. You see what I'm saying? That does count for something. Now, whether or not it'll translate all together, but he did finish our season 2-2, right? So, you know, he was 500 quarterback just to get started. He didn't have enough time to get more playing time. I think we could have did something if he had started early. That's why I was saying at a certain point, Marcus is getting us 150 yards a game, y'all, and turnovers. How is that putting us in the best position to win games? This isn't logical anymore. Let's see what the kid got, right? Because we do have a running game. We do have that, right? So we were competitive even with the foolery that Marcus was doing most of the time. So that's why I'm confident that I think we're in a better position no matter what, in a better situation than we've ever been in many years at the end of the day. Because now we do have the money that we can spend. We're going to have money next year too. Right?
Oh, yeah. They say we're going to have even more money.
The situation is flush right now. So you're talking about that. Like everybody right now is definitely fighting for jobs. Because, you know, sure thing right now. So that's why this draft is so important as well on that depth side, because if you get somebody who's really hungry, he could beat somebody out too. You know, it could be a linebacker. It could be a cornerback. It could be a wide receiver for sure. Like, probably wide receiver for sure is probably the weakest part of our game pass, London, and I can't forget remember the other guy right now. But it's not like we have, like, a stalwart wide receiver room right now, literally.
No.
Unless you count the tight ends. You count the tight ends, you kind of do, but if we're just going to go wide receiver, it's Drake London and everybody else. Everybody else is going to have to prove themselves this year. So,
those names you called, it was only London and Darby that I remember ever here. So,
Hodge got a couple of passes here and there. But Bernhardt, not really. I don't even think Josh Ali was, you know, Rashawn Henry, no. So it was pretty much Drake London and, you know, Darby, Hodge. We did lose a receiver, too. I forgot.
Macias.
Yeah, Macias is gone. OZ is gone. So we did lose a few people as well. So there you go. That's another opportunity, again, to maybe replace somebody like that in the draft as far as that goes. This is going to be really interesting because, like I said, we do have picks, but we're the defensive side of the ball is going to win us a lot of games by default. And the offense to just do what they did last year and better, you know, again, without the turnovers and actually getting the ball to the receivers in the proper manner, not overthrowing them and things of that nature, I think we're going to be in good shape, you know, for this season. I straight up think we can win the division. Winning 10 games, definitely, I think we can do that. I really do think we can do that. I don't see why we can't do that. Now, after that, I don't know. We'll have to see. But, again, we won 7 games with the foolery last year. And we're talking about some foolery stuff after last year. Without having, again, all the injuries, again, not having that competency at the quarterback position at the end of the day. You're getting full team back this year, plus all the extra on the defensive side of the ball. I think we're keyed up to be able to do that this year. But that's just me. I might be crazy, but, you know, I'd rather think like that than think we're going to win 7 games again. I just don't. If we do win 7 games again, yeah, Arthur might be on the hot seat all of a sudden. We just spent all that money not for him to win 7 games. That's why I say that. Like, I don't think he's on the hot seat, but we can't regress anymore. We can't get any worse. Last year we were, what's the word? We were prevented from winning, basically, because, you know, he insisted to keep playing Marcus Mariota no matter what, okay? It is what it is, and at the end of the day, we still didn't get stops. This year, we're going to get stops, so that's not going to be an issue. We're not giving up 25 points a game. We're not giving up 400 yards a game anymore. I just don't think that's going to happen. So on the offensive side, if we control the ball, don't turn it over, everybody catches the ball like they know they can, Pitts and London doing their thing, Janu, all those guys, Keith doing his thing every now and again, I think we'll be fine. I think we can win 10 games. I think we can win the division. The division is wide open. This is about as wide open a division has been for the Falcons in a long time. I think they can do it. And again, once you get into the playoffs, anything can happen. We know that for a fact too. So
now, one thing that everybody needs to realize: our defense gave up a ton of yards last year, but didn't give up a lot of scores. There was only, I think, about 2, possibly 3 games in the whole 17-game season over 25 points. Just 3 games. So we had drives, though, that would last an eternity. We would start from a 5-yard line and drive, have a 95-yard drive, an 87-yard drive, a 75-yard drive. We would eat up clock, but if we ever fell behind, we didn't have the offensive firepower to catch back up, okay? So I was encouraged by that defense because it's what you keep off the scoreboard that really counts. You know, you can pile up all the yards.
And just to interject real quick, so kind of I was talking about the 25-point stuff from years past. You're correct. We didn't really give up the points. It was just they just ate up the clock. And since we didn't have it on the offensive side, yeah, we got behind. It was going to be hard to think that Marcus Mariota was going to drive us down the field and get a couple touchdowns or whatever.
Right.
Although we saw Ritter do that a couple times. So I'm just saying, that's why I said I think we're going to be better off long term, especially with Pitts coming back, because Pitts is going to just break open our offense because he's always going to get the ball. He's going to be wide open. He's going to get it. Like, there ain't going to be no question. Whether it be a slant or just going straight down the field, he's going to get it. And we got enough other people on the offensive side of the ball to where they can get it too. Coming out of the backfield, we can run all kind of plays now with running backs coming out of the backfield and catching the ball now, right? So
right.
I think that part of it is going to really open up, as well as the running game is going to continue, because those guys are going to have another year. Now they had that full year of being together, you know, that continuity on the running game is going to be really well. They're going to take pride in that, having that 1,000-yard season. They're not going to want to not have another 1,000-yard season amongst each other, right? So I think that's going to play a part a little bit too. So both sides of the ball, offense and defense, and then even special teams is going to come into play again too. You know, can we stop teams from getting big yardage on special teams coming up the field? Can we open it up even more than we did last year? We had a pretty good offensive side of special teams last year. Can that even get better, possibly? I think that can be an improvement as well. Because, again, you need all these aspects, the facets of the game, to win these games on a regular basis, because other teams have been doing it. And like I said, all I want is to see our team do it. Just one time, can we just have all of our phases working together all at once? Is that too much to ask? And I think this season coming up, I think it's going to be the first time that we get to see it in a while, and then it'll be continuous. Next 5, 6, 7, 8 years, and we have a window to really compete for a championship eventually again. So, like I say, anything can happen once you're in the playoffs. You get hot, the other team has to play well too, and that always don't happen, right?
Oh, that's true. Because it's a one-game playoff in each round. Not like basketball, not like baseball. It's one game. And the best team that shows up in those playoffs in that one game, the one that moves on, and, hey, that's just nature of the beast. You can't play a three-game series in football. You can't even play a two-game series in football.
Nope. Talking about basketball.
And Hunter. And here's Young. Backtrack. 5-2. Young. Let's it go.
So since we hadn't had anybody call in for football, I did want to go ahead and talk a little bit about basketball. So last night you had the Atlanta Hawks. You know, they were pretty much were told that they were going to get swept by the current Eastern Conference champion Boston Celtics. And at worst, a gentleman's sweep. But here we are going into Atlanta tomorrow. You had to cancel the Janet Jackson concert because we're back in State Farm Arena to play game six. And you have, you know, Tatum, you know, didn't have that great of a game, you know, and, you know, other players on that team. And then one of the things that, by the way, again, if you didn't watch the interview of Bob Rathman and Steve Holman last Thursday, make sure you go to IMTN Worldwide Radio and it's episodes 123 and 122 around the ATL. But one of the things Bob Rathman said in that interview last week was that Quinn Snyder has a lot of playoff experience. The Celtics coach does not. And there's going to be an eventuality where that is going to come into play. And maybe we're seeing a little bit of it. Remember, the Hawks have won two out of three games now, right? And there's one part of yesterday's game that I do want to point out, and somebody I think was on Twitter that mentioned it. Why exactly was Blake Griffin in there for the period of time that he was in the fourth quarter? He hadn't played at all, and now all of a sudden he's in a crucial fourth quarter where you're at home and you're trying to eliminate. This is an elimination game, okay? So that just kind of, you know, I was like, I don't know. It didn't make sense either, but it is what it is. Now, will that play a part going into tomorrow? You know, who can make the adjustments or whatnot? One, Atlanta has some momentum. They've won two out of three. And now they've won in Boston, so they know if they can win at home, they know they have a shot, game seven, right? Boston, on the other hand, they can be like, okay, well, we did everything we could to stop Trey. We couldn't do it. And then John blew up. What are we going to do, you know? And the bench played well again, right? Snyder did some things. He didn't have Clint play that fourth quarter. I think that was probably the biggest part of the reason why we won. Because, again, like I've been saying, we're playing 4-on-5 with him right now. He's not giving you anything on the offense. He can't give you anything on the offensive side of the ball. He just can't. It's not him. And if he's not getting lobs, there's nothing he's doing in that paint. He's not a post player. He's never been that. Every now and again, he'll get a little aggressive, and he'll go throw up the baby hook every now and again. But even last night, there was that one play where he was right there. It was kind of like the Al Horford play where they passed it to Al. Al was there. Then he passed it kind of like a Ben Simmons thing, and he didn't see he was wide open. Same thing happened with Clint last night to where he was point blank right there. And even Bob said it on the telecast. He was like, well, Bob, you know, well, Clint didn't really feel comfortable. And but you got to shoot it there. I was like, you're right there. Like, whatever happens, we got to live with it. But you were right there. We needed those 2 points right there, man. You know, so that's why I said at the end of the day, I wrote the article again about, you know, Big O switching them and having him start or at least play more minutes. Because he can hit shots, he can finish inside, and he can play post defense. You know, he blocks shots, he does all those things. So I just think it's a matter of transitioning them. Because the goal is to win the game, right? The goal is to win the game. Actually, you know what? I haven't played that in a while. So let me see if I can find it real quick. I haven't played that sounder in a long time. So let me see if I can find it. Oh, goodness. Let me see if I can find it. I have to play it because I just thought about it. There we go.
You play to win the game. Hello?
Yeah, I had to play. I haven't played that in a long time. So that's the goal, you know. And again, Snyder even mentioned that he was like, if the Boston Celtics had went small, John, I'm not putting you back out there. But they didn't go small. John stays out there. He hits those shots and whatnot. But it's a matter of the twists and turns of making decisions and making the best decisions over a period of time and being able to adjust. We should have won game four. Okay? If we had won game four, all of a sudden tomorrow's an elimination game for the Hawks. I think a lot of people miss that too, right? So we could be in a three-game winning streak right now. So I think, again, right now it's a matter of, and I mentioned this on Twitter as well, the reason that you're a fan of a team is that you always do believe, even if it's a slight belief, that your team has a chance to win, has a chance to advance, has a chance to win a championship or whatnot. The reason that the Kings winning their first playoff game in 17 years mattered the other week was that all those fans continued to go to games for 17 straight years, missing the playoffs every year, right? So it's a matter of watching Trey hit that shot, watching the team come back from a 10-point, 13-point deficit over and over again, not giving up and things of that nature. You don't know how the season's going to end. We know how the regular season ended, 41-41, right? But you never know if you get that shot what can happen. And this is – shoot, look at Miami and Milwaukee. Miami's the eighth seed. They had to win two games to get in, right? And here they are – I don't know what the score is. I hadn't checked. But they're on the verge of eliminating the top seed in the East, right? So you've got to – you have to qualify. Every time people talk about losing games on purpose and all this kind of stuff, I keep telling people – no players are losing games for a draft pick that may or may not work out, right? And if you never qualify for the playoffs, you can never win a championship. It's never happened. And look at all the teams that have always had these draft picks. How well has it worked out? How many championships do those teams that have lost on a consistent basis and gotten all those draft picks, how many championships do they have, right? So, you know, now OKC eventually might get one because they got like a trillion draft picks, right? Eventually it has to work out for them, right? I guess. I don't know. But I want to see the Hawks continue to play well. I want to see the Hawks have a chance to win. That's all you ask for. The excitement of what Trae Young is able to do along with his teammates and everything. But we know he is a superstar. It's like John said before he left. Jordan said before he left. Trae is a superstar. He's led the league in assists the last two seasons. He's already passed a lot of Hall of Famers in like 30 and 10 games. Like he's in the same categories as LeBron, Jason Kidd, Magic Johnson, Steve Nash, all these guys who've been doing it for years and has played 5 years in the NBA. He's averaging 25 and 10 as a player. How many players in the NBA are averaging 25 and 10 for their career? Not many. Like none of them. You see what I'm saying? And if you go back even further, it's like there's not that many at all. And so, you know, Trae is pacing right now. If he continues to go the way he is, he could finish in the top 10 in scoring and assists all time, maybe top five, right? So, again, I just don't see why the people hate Trae as much as they do. It's kind of crazy at this point. People have been begging and wishing for a superstar since Neek. And before Neek, who was it before Neek? We didn't really have one. The best player before Neek, I guess, Bob Pettit. How many decades are we talking there, right?
Well, Lou Hudson, Brownfield. You know, there were various ones that you know, he's at the power.
The only reason I mentioned Pettit because he has a championship. So
right. Well, it wasn't here. It wasn't here.
In our modern era, I know we're still lacking,
championships. And see, this is something I get at people about in football. There were championships prior to the Super Bowl, ladies and gentlemen, okay? Fan bases were constructed in Cleveland, Cleveland, Akron, Ohio, the birthplace of the NFL up there in the northeast portion of the country, where they had championships and championship games before Super Bowl. The Super Bowl was nothing more than the National Football League going against this renegade AFL, where they said, okay, we want to see who's best between these two leagues. They joined together in a Super Bowl and played each other. Then they eventually merged. and those teams from the AFL became NFL teams, and they were in the American Football Conference, some to the National Football Conference. But those teams built fan bases from those championships, fan bases that traveled.
Yeah.
You know, Chicago travels, Cleveland travels, Detroit travels, New England travels. All these people travel. That's how those fan bases got to be constructed. But back to the Hawks. The MVP of that game, in my opinion, didn't even play last night. DeJounte Murray was the MVP of that game because if you watch games 1 through 4,
you actually stealing what I was going to talk about, too. But go ahead.
I'm sorry. Chris, well, let's talk about it.
No, go ahead. Well, you already said it. So if, just going by what you were about to say, we weren't getting any calls. It was pretty much the NBA basically said, no matter what, the Hawks are not getting past game. It just ain't going to happen. We saw some, like I said, I play basketball, and there was some foolery that we seen on the floor that if we were playing on the court, It just would have been over because it would have been fights galore. But last night, all of a sudden, we started getting some calls in our favor. You know what I'm saying? And so, you know, at the end of the day, if Murray had to be the sacrificial lamb for us, it worked. Because on the technical side, he shouldn't have had to do that. It should have been our owner or you know, who has all the money in the world, who can take all the fines and you just cut everybody out after a game. You know, Snyder probably wouldn't do it necessarily. He's kind of diplomatic and things of that nature. But we needed somebody from the Hawks organization to be able to do it. So if it wasn't going to be from the upper, it had to be somebody on the court. And Murray took it. I feel strongly that was purpose. You know what I'm saying? Because it was obscene, some of the stuff that was going on. Like, it takes a lot for him to even get that kind of angry. That wasn't basketball. You know, there was stuff that was happening. It wasn't basketball. And so definitely I think that really changed everything, you know, to the point where even with Marcus Smart, there was stuff he couldn't get away with. Al Horford, he wouldn't get away with it. You know what I'm saying? We've seen it. You know, so I think go ahead. I think that was a big deal.
And you know, I wanted you to go ahead and say, because I've been saying it for the past day. I've cut two videos on two different sites citing the same thing. And Chris, 92.9 The Game, I went on, called in the States program, brought the same situation up. DeJounte Murray, he's the MVP. Trae Young, DeJounte Murray created a canvas for the Hawks to paint on, okay? Because if he had not done that, Trae wouldn't have ever been able to do what he did. John Collins wouldn't have been able to do what they did, okay? Everybody that contributed last night would not have been able to get that type of shot because everybody knows who's ever followed basketball in the 70s and in the 80s especially. I don't care who you are. I'm not just talking about the Hawks. I don't care who you are. You don't get the benefit of the whistle in Boston. You never have. No one ever has. The Rockets. You didn't get the calls in Boston. And in 86, when we stole a game in Boston, you remember when we stole a game in Boston and brought it back here because we were about to be gone then.
Yeah.
We brought it back here, and you know, we took them to 7 games. I'm getting them thoughts, Chris. I'm getting them thoughts because they on the ropes because they were embarrassed last night. And you alluded to the fact that they put Blake Griffin in. They did that because they wanted Blake Griffin to get some run and practice for the next round. Because they figured that game was over. Because I think they had about a 12-point lead at that time. Okay? But to the Hawks' credit, to the Hawks' credit, they took this seriously, and they said, you're not going to just run over us. And because of Murray's, and I call it Murray's sacrifice, because of his sacrifice, they coming back here for game six. Now, I have been hollering, yelling, lobbying, begging. Nate McMillan was here. So they were doing the same thing with Nate McMillan. The officials weren't giving us no type of justice, no matter who it was we were playing. Poor Trae Young driving to the basket, he flying four rows up into the stain because they knocking him all over the court. They slapping him. Every time he goes up for a layup, it's just like he's putting his hand in a lawnmower blade. I mean, just killing the man. Okay? No foul calls. And part of that, you remember, the story was told that Lloyd Pierce was the one, along with Steve Nash, when he was coaching. Oh, y'all, Trae Young shouldn't be able to get away with that. He's contorting his body unnaturally and drawing fouls or whatever. But see, the thing is, what did Steve Nash benefit from? What did you benefit from when you were point guard? You stop it, dribbling, and then stop it, send the man running to the back of you. Whee! You go to the line. But you don't want anybody else to get it?
Yeah.
So thing is that the scales evened up last night. And the Hawks organization, like I was alluding to saying before I went off that way, somebody needed to take one for the team from the coaching staff. If it wasn't Quinn Snyder.
It could have, you're right. It could have been somebody. Somebody needed to throw a chair on the floor. Maybe they needed to bump a rep. Something needed to, you can't just let those things happen and not bring it to attention that y'all are being egregious out here. And then also Secaucus can actually see this stuff too. So they could do some reviews to be like, okay, this is blatant. This is stupid. This is idiotic. What are they even doing out there? How come they're, somebody has to call attention to, where is Alvin Silver at, for crying out loud, right?
And you remember, instance, I think it was either Toronto or they called a foul on Jalen Johnson on a last-second three-pointer where everybody met hands. But a man shooting the ball and Jalen Johnson met hands, ball gone. Their little two-minute report that they go over, well, that shouldn't have been a foul on Jalen Johnson. But thing is, Hawks had the lead.
Yeah.
The Hawks had the lead. Okay? You took a game literally out of their hands by allowing them free throws so that they could shoot themselves back in the lead. We end up with a last second attempt that we can't capitalize on. We got ripped off. We got ripped off. And if you are, and game four, Stella goes up to bank the ball off the backboard, Tatum grabs the net, pulls up on the net while he's jumping to help him out-jump Clint Capella for the layup and block the shot. Everybody in State Farm Arena going crazy. Everybody going crazy because they see it up on the Jumbotron. They see it everywhere. They know about it. Officials didn't see it. Now, stuff like that, see, you think these officials getting hurt in these church leagues and in these little leagues around town, with bad calls or perceived bias officiating, you don't want to see these people coming out of these stands. Y'all gonna have to start putting plexiglass around these arena stands if y'all keep this up. Cause somebody coming, I guarantee you, they keep this up, somebody coming.
Yeah, like I was saying, rest control way too much. And they control games, and they can't keep putting these reports out talking about how this mistake was made. If you're not going to replay the last 3 minutes of a game, I don't care. I would rather not see the obvious, just to get more infuriated about the situation. I can't imagine what the players be thinking. Because like I said, even with the Lakers, we're talking about the Lakers a little bit. There was games that they had taken away from them. because of calls, right? It's not, yep. It's the whole league. And it's like, how do you just have all these bad people together? I think we got, I think this is Jordan back on the line. Go ahead, Jordan.
Nah, this is Nas, man. I just saw y'all was on, so I was like, let's see what they talking about. What's happening, y'all?
What's up, man? How you doing? Long time no here.
Yes, sir. I'm cooling, man. Nothing going on. I love it, though, man. Y'all bringing up that real. Officiating the NBA is really bad, and more than anything, it's so much ego tripping, where it's like, okay, I can't let this guy show me up. Well, he didn't try to show you up. You jumped the gun and overreacted, and then you missed the call later on, and now he's looking at you like, you know, you Ed Malloy, one of them guys. So I'm with y'all on this, man. This is definitely something they got to clean up. I don't want the robots out there, but hell, what choice are they giving?
Well, I mean, like I said, I've been saying that for a while in baseball, because in baseball is really bad. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, so at a certain point, it needs to at least be. I mean, how much do we gotta pay Elon Musk to help us out a little bit? You know, and at least let's start testing this out a little bit, right? So it's pretty bad. You hate for it to happen in the playoffs, right? Because at a certain point, the whole 82-game schedule comes to a head in the playoffs, because it is one and done, you know, at a certain point, right? And so you hate to see teams lose because of not playing the game. That has something nothing to do with them. And then find out it was a mistake call or whatever. It was a blown call or whatever. So anything else, Nas?
Shout out to the Hawks for – like, look, man, it's easy to lay down in that game situation. They chose not to, man. They extended the season. Quinn gets a better look at who he wants to be there next year. I hate to be the bad guy. One of the big guys got to go, and I'm not going to say his name, but I think y'all know who I'm talking about. Put the young boy in and let's go, man. What are you prolonging this for? And the man who we've tried to trade 150,000 times, just take less. Get him out of here. Just get him done. That's all I got.
I got you, man. Appreciate you calling in once again, man. We'll talk soon.
Yes, sir. You have a good one.
All right, man. Yeah, and we got about 10 minutes left, y'all. You just hate, again, when you're playing street ball or whatever, and you're calling your own fouls and everything, everybody's respect the call, right? You know, and sometimes you do argue a little bit, be like, okay, we'll give you that one, but next time, it's, you know, whatever, right? On the NBA court, you don't have that. It's what the ref says goes, right? And even with replay, it's crazy sometimes. They still get it wrong sometimes, and it's like, what are y'all seeing as opposed to everybody else that's in the arena right now? And like you said, we might need to put some blocks up around the court, because eventually somebody's just going to go crazy and just come down there and just rain, you know. So something needs to be improved. Again, I don't know if they have, you know, I see online sometimes, I see, you know, your G League guys, you know, and girls and gals, I guess you could say. But what kind of actual training in the offseason do they have? Do they have literal, you know, scholastic something, another rules and everything and visuals to go off of and things of that nature and actual practice? Because this is the last place you want to be able to have people controlling actual games. Like, it's not easy to get to the playoffs. There are some players who have never had a playoff series, right? Or they've only played one or two playoff games in their whole career. There's some players who have never been to a conference finals. There are a lot of players who've never been to an NBA finals. So it's a big deal to take that away from someone just because you wanted to blow a foul call or walking or whatever it might be. So hopefully they clean it up. Hopefully it's being noticed more and more. We don't need players suspended anymore just to be able to have to prove a point. Hopefully that doesn't happen anymore. But in this case, it did work, I think. Like I said, we got calls. We weren't getting calls before. It just wasn't happening. Like, anything, it was over the top at a certain point. But last night, we got a lot of calls. We didn't get all of them still, but we got enough to where it evened it out, right? Yeah. And gave us a chance to be competitive. So
yeah, that we were able to take it on in. We didn't play a really good game last night. Okay, we didn't play a really good game last night, but it was good enough of an effort to show that we have the capability of playing with a Boston Celtics at full strength, okay? And if you look at the games we've played this year, we haven't been blown out about three or four times the whole year.
Boston was one of them.
Yeah, and the thing is that that lets me know we close. We are close.
Well, look, I told people that from a while ago on the basis of the reason we won, I wanted to play the Heat. I didn't want to be sugarcoating it. We need to play and beat the Heat. We need to do that. And I wanted to play Boston. We're going to have to prove that we can play against these teams. And the reason I said, and I said this on the interview with Bob Rafferty last week, the reason I felt we could beat the Celtics is, one, we're healthy. We weren't healthy last year at all. Nobody can say that we were. Our whole team was hurt, right? We're healthy this year. Two, we got a better bench than we had last year. By far, can't be contested. Number three, we do have Murray here who can get his own shot and play defense, steal the ball, whatever, rebound, and hit shots. So that right there puts you in a better position than you ever could have expected from last year. So that's where it was going to come down to is, can you outplay Boston at any point in time? But if you can do that, you got a shot. And we proved that now two out of the last three times. Now we got to do it two more times to see what can happen. So,
and see, officiating, one thing versus the 70s and the 80s, man, it's too much money involved for people like you, officials, to come out there and mess up games, mess up people's careers, mess up people's jobs, mess up people's futures because you want to swallow the whistle. And, you know, and there was a couple of people talking about, well, they swallowed the whistle for both teams. Well, you know what that does to a Boston? Boston already plays physical, okay? You get out there with a team that already plays physical, and the referee swallows their whistle, oh, what they were getting away with, they going to push the envelope even further.
Yeah.
They're going to see what they can get away with until you do blow the whistle. Versus us, anything, man, look, we passed by, man. Do you remember the play where Smart went back, caught the ball in the front court, stepped into the back court, Trey Young is standing behind him, not touching him, nowhere, I mean, 3 feet away from him, doing like this, they call a foul on Trey Young.
Yeah.
Now, come on, man. Come on. Come on. And everybody's seeing this. So, like I said, DeJounte Murray, you did what needed to be done. Your boys had your back. We got the game. Quinn Snyder, Russler, your son, Landry Fields, one of y'all is going to have to take the mantle. One of you all, y'all got no money to pay a fine. We'll pay the fine. If y'all can't afford it, the fans will pay the fine. You know? We will do this.
Cash out.
What will you do for your team? That's the question.
Got to happen. Well, John, I want to say thank you for joining tonight, man, in a pinch-hitting role. Appreciate that. I'm glad Jordan was able to call in for a second or two. Obviously, tonight, y'all, was a great show talking, you know, Atlanta Falcons football. The NFL draft is tomorrow, as well as everything else in sports, apparently. So it's going to be very interesting to kind of see that. But definitely, we're going to be doing a post-draft show in the very near future. So, you know, definitely look out for that. We did it last year. We had a lot of fun doing it. So we're going to do that again. Don't know the date yet, but just be looking out for that to see what we picked or what we didn't pick, what happened. We're going to go through that. And definitely we'll have some video footage and things of that nature of different players and everything like that. So stay tuned for that. Of course, one of our next shows will be in a whole 2 hours of Hawks Talk. We were able to sneak in a little bit tonight, but we're going to have a whole 2 hours of that, so definitely look into that. No matter what happens tomorrow, we're going to do that and go over it. We're excited about what's going on in Atlanta sports right now. All of us should be. That's the whole point of Around the ATL. We're talking Atlanta sports all the time, y'all. So that being said, don't forget, please follow and subscribe to IMTN Worldwide YouTube channel, IMTN Worldwide Radio, and also the new website, IMTNWorldwideRadio.com. Let me put that up there because it's brand new. I just created it like a couple of days ago. There it is right there. So make sure you do that. Also, you can follow on Twitter. Mine is Intellect ATL, and my co-host Jordan is Jordan23ATL, obviously. Go ahead and shout out your if you got a page, John. I think you're on the internet sometimes, right?
Yeah, man. I'm what I guess you could call just freelance. Whenever I get that itch, finger to start typing, and I might cut all the bone. So just get it where you can. You'll see me.
Yeah. All right, y'all. Until next time, we're gonna go out with this one last little clip from last night, and then we'll get going for the night, y'all. Y'all take care. Peace.
Dan Hunter, and here's Young. Backtrack 5-2. Young, let's just go. Thank you.